You are listening to Cut Tip Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Saturday, for a change, April the 20th, 2024. JJ Sefton, along with my good friend, co-host, and co-blogger CBD, who has returned from Blighty. And today, returning for a third time, is a very special guest, the great Jim Lakely, who is the vice president and director of communications, I believe, for the Heartland Institute. And just as a bit of a prelude to it, on the last podcast, CBD and I were jokingly at the end of it, saying vote early, vote often, you know, for Donald Trump. And of course, the left is going to vote early, vote often multiple times to try to drag Biden over the finish line. But it raises a point about, you know, where we are in terms of the forget the ethics of politicians, but the ethics of individual people when it comes to being honest in an era where voting is, you know, voting security is lax, to say the least. And the previous two polls that Jim at the Heartland Institute, Jim Lakely's Heartland Institute had, were shocking. In number one, they proved pretty much that the cheating, there was a massive cheat in 2020, which did in fact put in, Biden over the line. And then another follow-up poll, which where people admitted to really being cheaters to a very great extent. And now Jim has a follow-up poll, which is even more disturbing in its indications about where we are as an ethical and moral people in society. So CBD and Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, you know, Sefton and I were talking about what we should do with this, and I said let's get Jim Lakely on because he is coherent in his speech, unlike us. But you know, I read the article, and it is depressing in many ways. But to me, what this indicates is a significant breakdown in our civil society, and what that is driven by. Can you know, that's anybody's guess. I have lots and lots of guesses, but that to me is what is the most depressing and most significant thing that I took away from this. But at any rate, Jim, take it away.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on the podcast with you two gentlemen. One of these days I will come on and we will have good news to talk about, perhaps. I don't know. It's the three times now I've been on lately, it is to share some pretty depressing news about the security and integrity of our election system. And the theme here is that the election system in America is broken, more broken than perhaps even, certainly I think more broken than any Western democracy, and probably more broken than some of the, you know, kleptocratic authoritarian regimes out there. I mean, sometimes I think our election system might be slightly ahead of North Korea at this point, because our latest. So as you pointed out in that wonderful intro, JJ, the Heartland Institute released a poll back in December because we wanted to find a way to measure what we all kind of felt in our hearts and saw with our eyes, really more than that, that the 2020 election wasn't on the up and up. So we crafted a poll that described illegal voting and asked voters if they mailed in their ballots in the 2020 election, if they had done any of these illegal things. And a shocking 28% of voters in the 2020 election who mailed in their ballots admitted to one form of illegal voting. And so we decided, gosh, is it possible now to measure if people are willing and maybe even planning to do similar cheating and illegal voting with their mail-in ballots in the 2024 election? Because, because of the pandemic, we threw out all election law, threw out all the rules in many states illegally and corruptly. And that broken election system in which, you know, the voter rolls are not cleaned, because that's voter suppression, guys, and it's probably racist. And so you just mail out all of these ballots, tens of millions of them, hundreds of millions of them. And there's no way to check it. And there's no way to ensure that that is a legitimate vote, that it is the will of the person and actually is the person to whom you mailed that ballot. And so we decided to look ahead into 2024 and ask people if they would, again, engage in illegal voting, which is a felony. In short, whether they would cheat in the 2024 election when they get a mail-in ballot. And Troublingly, we did find that a shocking amount of people said that if they were given the opportunity, in fact, 28% said they would engage in at least one kind of illegal voting practice to help their preferred candidate, either Joe Biden or Donald Trump. I mean, this election is so, this nation is very divided. It seems that each side, especially the, for lack of a better term, hardcore partisans on each side, seem willing to do almost anything to make sure their guy wins the White House. And so, again, we asked if they would cheat if to get their guy across the finish line, because this is the most important election in our lifetime, right? And so, what we found was that 28% would commit some sort of voter fraud just to make sure their guy won. And this is all enabled by the throwing out of election rules, by lax enforcement of the weak election laws we even have on the books, the absolute near non-punishment of anybody who is caught red-handed after the fact of cheating in the election. We need to get this fixed, or the will of the people is forfeit. It's null and void. We're all old enough to remember. I've never actually cast a mail-in ballot. I've always gone to the polling place. And in fact, famously, in the 2020 election, it was kind of a point of emphasis that Republicans can and should show up in person and cast their ballots at their local polling place, while the other side just mailed everybody. They depended on mail-in ballots. They depended on ballot harvesting. They depended on showing up, having a Dropbox that is unmonitored, and then anybody can put any ballot in there. And then we ended up getting the contentious, and I think all three of us agree, not legitimate result in that 2020 election. And the bad news, like I always seem to bring to this podcast, is that it doesn't seem a lot has changed, and it seems that the 2024 election will be as rife with fraud as the 2020 election.
So this to me brings up two issues. The first one that I brought up in our last discussions is that you are measuring the agreement of some pe of people who are agreeing with the idea that they're going to cheat. So the number that you have found is obviously lower than the true number, which is even more chilling.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. I mean, this
Yeah,
is just like the previous poll, these are people admitting to a stranger on the telephone that they plan or had committed an illegal act, casting an illegal ballot either in the last election or they plan to do it if they have to, if they feel they have to make sure their guy wins in the next election. And
So
that number is probably low because how many people are, is that that's the floor. Let's just say that. That's probably the floor and not the ceiling.
but the
This is
what really troubles me is this total breakdown in what I described earlier as in our civil society. This is not America as we know it. We have changed fundamentally. And I'm not channeling Barack Obama. This is a terrifying thing that a significant number of Americans feel that our election system is essentially ripe for the picking, that it can be manipulated based on the desires of one's political party, of one's political philosophy, of one's craven self-interest. And that shows a disconnect from what American exceptionalism has always been.
Right. Well,
You know what?
I'm just
I'll say,
quickly.
I go.
Yeah, just
Go ahead,
quickly. I
Jim.
mean, to your point, what's interesting, and everyone should go to heartland.org right now. It's the very first featured item on our homepage at the Heartland Institute, and you can see the results for yourself. What was interesting is that we asked these questions like, if your spouse or another trusted family member gave you permission to fill out and sign their mail-in ballot, allowing you to use their ballot to vote for anyone you choose. Would you do that? 18% said they would do that. 79% said no. But then we asked the people, these good Americans, right, who said, no, I'm not going to commit voter fraud. That would be wrong. Then we asked them a follow-up. If they said no, or they weren't sure about that answer, we said, however, if altering the candidate selection were the only way to stop Donald Trump from being elected, and we asked this to Biden respondents, would you do it? So once you ask that question, once you put it that way, the 88% or 70, around 80% of people who said, no, I wouldn't cheat. He said, well, what if it was the only way to stop Donald Trump? Oh, well, then in that case, 8% said yes. And then would you destroy a mail-in ballot belonging to a friend or family member without their knowledge to stop Donald Trump from being elected president? 12% of Biden supporters who said they would not cheat, given that scenario, 12% said, well, yeah, I'd have to do that. And so this points to CBD, your point that we seem to have lost our moral center in this country, that something as important as an election, it doesn't matter how much you support or how much you may fear another candidate, and that those fears are unfounded, certainly for Trump, that these kinds of answers, I know to all of us would seem inconceivable 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And in fact, polls have shown that before the 2020 election, the vast majority of Americans had a lot of faith in the integrity of our election system in this country. But the last two elect well, the last election in 2020 and this one here is completely destroying it. And I think that points to some real deep-seated problems in our political system and in frankly in our in our society as a moral country.
I was going to say, Jim, that it's for so many things just flying in my head right now, just with both you guys' comments. It's not even so much. I don't even think it goes beyond a question of ethics and morality, because I think there is such a deep-seated now mass psychosis, or whatever you want to call it, especially among the left, because when you equate Donald Trump and the right now as not merely conservatives or this or that, but racist and literally Hitler and so on and so forth, they believe that it's the moral and ethical and righteous thing to do to prevent the rise of a second Hitler. It's not even a question of just, doing it for the sake of cheating it and, so on and so forth. It goes, because that would presume that you are fully aware of what you are doing is wrong in the definition of the word wrong. But because they believe that God is on their side, so to speak, and conservatives, Donald Trump, and so on and so forth, are literally evil and will literally create the concentration camps, gulags, and so on and so forth, that, let me tell you something, they definitely will, that it's their moral duty and moral responsibility to prevent Donald Trump et al. From being elected and resuming and assuming power once again. And that's, as I said, it goes beyond just the questions of morals and ethics, because they now believe that they are morally and ethically righteous, and that it is the moral and ethical and righteous thing to do to, quote unquote, cheat. They don't even view it as cheating. So that is a real divide that leads me to the conclusion that this country, and wasn't alive back then, so I'm theoretically not entitled to reparations, but I think this country is even more divided today than it was in 1860 to 1865 on a certain level.
That's defensible. That's a bold statement, JJ, but that is defensible. It reminds, I think we would all agree that Barack Obama really specialized in divisive rhetoric. But as you were talking there, JJ, it reminded me that Joe Biden has actually the one thing he has done better than Barack Obama is with divisive rhetoric that really runs into the category of dangerous rhetoric, the way he characterizes the likes of us, and frankly, half of this country, that infamous, red speech that he gave, with dress uniform Marines in the background and red lights. Where was it? In Independence
In
Hall?
Independence Hall, and there
Independence
were,
Hall. He called us fa semi-fascist and threats to democracy. I mean, the president of the United States is characterizing half this country as a threat to democracy. So yeah, when you that side, the left side, and Joe Biden characterize half the country as threats, cheating in an election, that is the least his supporters can do in their own minds to ensure that we're not going to be ruled by fascists or even semi-fascists if Donald Trump is president again.
Well,
Well,
I think what has happened
look
is
at
that
yeah.
we've become unmoored from a coherent political philosophy, and I think a lot of the blame sits squarely in the academy. You look at postmodernism and the thought process that allows people to believe in a postmodern philosophy, takes us completely away from the idea of I don't even know how to describe it. Takes us away from an election that is based on the will of the people. Their emphasis is not on the will of the people. Their emphasis is on their will, and which is interesting because they move away from the communitarian aspects of socialism, and what they're driving at is this intensely personal connection to these elections, and that separates them from what America is based on. I'm not describing it well, but I don't know. It's a sort of a weird combination of socialism and this, as I said, this intense individualism.
No, you're onto something there, and it's again when Joe Biden, it's Independence Hall, he did two other speeches. I forgot the second one, but the third one was in Valley Forge, and it's literally this. I mean, he's coming saying we have to come together, but we have to destroy the fascist republic. I mean, it's literally otherizing people in the same manner as Hitler did. And I'm not being hyperbolic here, as Hitler did, as Stalin did, as all of these two-bit dictators and horrendous mass murderers through history have demonized an entire group of people who are deemed as their political enemies, who are standing in the way of the so-called the will of the people. Yeah, which people? Yeah, exactly. The ones at the top. But I mean, that's the irony of it. They're standing in the way of the road to paradise and a glorious future by these people who are bloodsuckers and leeches and parasites and you name it. And that's exactly what they've done. So there is no coming together. And that's exactly what they're doing. And so when Joe Biden makes these speeches and says that Donald Trump and the right and the conservatives and the Christians and the Jews are bringing out, you know, are out to kill you. Guess what happens? You get transsexual terrorists who are shooting up Christian schools, who are threatening to shoot up Christian schools, who are firebombing courthouses, and they're looked upon as freedom fighters who maybe, if anything, get a slap on the wrist. But meanwhile, somebody dares pray in front of an abortion clinic and they get thrown into the clink for 20 years for terrorism and for hate speech. And that's where we are today. That's the divide. So, yeah, elections, whatever. But I mean, again, I stick by my point where even in 1860, you had two sides. And yes, slavery is a horrendous, you know, issue to talk about. And any decent person would be against it. But there was a basis of a commonality where at least one side believed in the American system, ironically, of the Constitution. And they were basically Christian people, although they still accepted slavery. And that was the divide. They wanted to try to restore the Union. And, you know, or at least what, you know, have their way of it with slavery. But here we have one side that takes a look at the other one and says, no, we have to absolutely destroy these people by hook, by crook, no matter what. Otherwise, they're out to get us and kill us. And the irony is the projection is that the side that claims that we're going to kill them, the first thing they do when they seize absolute power, and they're already doing it now between the censorship regimes, going after the Second Amendment, going after our freedoms. Look what they did to Trump's lawyer with the banks, like debanking him. They will do everything to suppress us, if not wipe us out totally. And that's the bitter irony of it all.
Yeah. Again, this is a depressing podcast, fellas. I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't have me on anymore. We tend to go down pretty dark roads together.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking over these questions again, looking for something, some little nugget of hope. And the only thing I can find is that Trump voters are marginally less sleazy than Biden voters.
Yeah. One of the bright spots actually is that if you're an independent voter, so like all of the polls that we do at Rasmussen Reports, it is professionally carried out, and it is reflective of the electorate as it is. It's not weighted too heavy on the Republican side or Democrat side. And in fact, it does seek out and poll independents or people who are not registered with either party. The only sliver of good news is that independent voters are significantly less likely to say that they would cheat in the next election to get their preferred candidate over the finish line. So I think that really kind of speaks to maybe those independents are people who do not pay attention to politics and the country as closely as the likes of you and I do. But, you know, so and independent voters are a large swath of Americans. It's probably close to one third are not registered with any party. I'd have to look that up. But, you know, at least there is a sizable percentage of voters or people who will vote in the 2024 election who are much less inclined to cheat and basically make the election even more fraudulent than partisans are. So, you know, if that's the only sliver of good news I see in this poll at all, to be honest.
One of the frustrating things about this is how easy it would be to fix our election problems. You know, we have a robust banking system in the United States. Probably 95% of Americans, I'm guessing the number, have debit card, you know, ATM cards or credit cards or whatever. And the amount of fraud among those things is tiny. Most people have never had a problem with their bank account because banks take very, very good care of each person's data. So we could hire, you know, JP Morgan or Bank of America or, you know, maybe not Wells Fargo, and ask them to build an election system that would be 99.99% accurate and safe. And it would be a triviality because we have those systems in place for dozens of things in our lives. And yet, for obvious reasons, folks, I'm not going to bore you with the reality of why we have a broken election system, but that's what it is. And yet it could be fixed so easily.
Well, you know, before we had these computerized electronic systems and so on and so forth, we had plain paper ballots. I mean, I always go back to you know, whatever it was during right after the Gulf War or the second Gulf War, or whatever, when the Iraqis had their elections and they dipped their frickin' thumb in purple ink and it showed that they voted. And you just can do just analog systems of paper ballots and voting rolls that get cleared every 2 to 3 years of dead people, of people who have moved and so on and so forth. You come in on the day that you're supposed to do it. And with very, very little exceptions, there is no such thing as absentee ballots, unless you know you're military personnel or somebody serving overseas, or you know you're going to be out of the country to vote in person way ahead of time, and you plan it, and it's secure. And all of these things can be done easily. It's when we went to the electronic stuff, and now all of a sudden, as Jim pointed out, of course, at the beginning of the podcast, evisceration of any kind of security, the mailing of mail-in ballots, ballot collection boxes, and so on and so forth. It's a complete and utter joke. I mean, the banana republics everywhere are laughing at us because this is the kind of crap that they do. And God, and we're doing it even worse than they are. So, as you say, it's so easy to stop this, but there's no will to do it because, let's face it, it is now openly a rigged game. It's no longer just merely, you know, like the Daily Machine in Chicago, which was a joke, or other places around the country over the years that, you know, if you want to call JFK's election because of Texas and because of Chicago, but it's now everywhere, or most states are really prone to this kind of horrible fraud, especially the six swing states that did it the last time around. On a positive note, I'd like to get both of your reactions to the fact that Lara Trump, I believe, and this guy Whatley, who are the new RNC chair, are supposedly going, you know, maybe it's too late for them, but they are really emphasizing election security and ramping up the efforts right now before the election. So hopefully that makes a difference. I don't know. I'll get your guys' opinion on that.
Well, I mean, do you have specific? I haven't followed that as closely as you have, JJ. I mean, do you have any specifics they basically, on their plans?
Yeah, they basically were saying. Yeah, they announced that they're going to have an arm. They're now using funds instead of wasting it on stupid ad campaigns and whatever. But they're using the funds to hire teams of lawyers, to hire election observers, and to really, really go to the polling places, especially in the swing states, the crucial swing states, to make sure that the shenanigans doesn't happen. And of course, this is leading to a reaction from the junta and the DOJ to go after our election observers and basically probably arrest them at the polls as interfering with the elections, which essentially, you know, it's Orwellian in its concept. But still, that's what they announce that they're doing. So more power to them. And I hope it makes a difference.
Look, most election laws and our elections are run by our states, even the federal elections, by and large. I mean, there are federal election rules and laws, but it's the states that run their elections. That's why, for instance, I think Oregon has had universal mail-in balloting, for almost 20 years. But they also have, you know, measures in place to ensure the integrity of it. You know, the problem with 2020 is that all of these states that had never done mail-in balloting before just decided to do it because, oh my gosh, the pandemic. You know, you can go to the grocery store, you can go to the doctor, you can go lots of places. But you, oh my God, if you go to a polling place, you're putting your life at risk. So we're just going to mail everybody a ballot and run our elections that way, with states that had no experience doing this. Pennsylvania had never done that before. Arizona had never done that before. Wisconsin had never done that before. And so it allowed, you know, it's an analogy is like, you know, you live in a high crime neighborhood and you decide, you know what, I'm going to make a big show of removing the lock from my door. I'm going to leave my door wide open. And all my windows, and then just hope for the best that nobody's going to come in and steal all my stuff and maybe harm me. So that's basically what we had done in the 2020 election, states over states. But if the new regime at the Republican National Committee really wants to fix our election systems, there are many states in which the legislatures are run by Republicans. They could say, and they could do this today, do you want any RNC money for your race? Well, you're not going to get any unless you introduce a bill to end mail-in balloting, to clean up the voting rolls. Unless you take measures to stop this no-excuse mail-in voting stuff, if you're going to have mail-in voting, you have to make sure that ballot is notarized. You have to outlaw ballot harvesting, and you have to strengthen the punishment with serious jail time for people who are caught, you know, breaking election laws. If you can do all of that, we would be happy to give you all the financial support you need to win your next election. To me, until the Republican National Committee does that, frankly, they're just not serious enough about this issue, because there is those kinds of measures. There is no legitimate objection to those measures. Everybody who is fair-minded would consider all of those measures to be sound, and they would applaud them. They say this is absolutely necessary because the integrity of our elections is paramount. You know, it's okay if you lose fair and square, but if you lose because one side has engaged for years and has perfected ballot harvesting and going to nursing homes and getting ballots filled out by people who obviously are not capable of voting with a sound mind, you know, and then the other side doesn't do any of that stuff and also doesn't put in any laws in place to prevent fraud, you're not a serious party, and the RNC is not serious about this issue unless they take it to that level.
Well, we have to wait and to see what happens in November 2024 to see whether the RNC is serious. I don't think that they are. I think that they're making very, very nice, pretty noises at the very top. But the structure of the RNC is such that it's going to take years and years and years for that mindset to filter down into the 50 state organizations. And that's going to be very, very difficult. I see the RNC, as I said, making nice noises, but I look at the New Jersey Republican Committee and it's crap. And I look at the New York Republicans and they're crap. So, you know, in deep blue America, there is no possibility of any of the pressure that you've described, which, by the way, is perfectly rational. Everything you said makes perfect sense. And as you say, no sentient human being with an ounce of logic in his brain could say, oh, no, that's wrong. So I think that the problem is even more profound than you describe.
Well, the GOP is I call them the grifting oleaginous parasite party, which is exactly what they are. They're just basically, you know, and we talked about this, unfortunately, with the really the insanity of what Mike Johnson has done with these funding bills for Ukraine and Israel, and supposedly with not a dime for border security. Yes, there is border security. It's the border of Ukraine. So with leadership like that, he supposedly was put in place because we got rid of Frank Luntz's cabana boy, Kevin McCarthy. And of course, people on the Senate side, like Mitch, you know, McChinless, now to be substituted by his younger doppelganger, John Thune, in all likelihood. It's ridiculous. We don't have a party. The party is at war with itself. While at the same time, we have half of the country trying to wipe us out. So that whole insanity is just, you know, we have to fight that battle before we can even begin to address these problems. And then you look at Maine. Maine just, I think they just are about to pass, or they did pass this thing where they're going to go with ranked choice voting. And also, CBD, you pointed out, I think you had a thing in the sidebar the other day. They've now joined this compact of now how many states is it? Something like 19 or 20 states that want to have popular, you know, forget the electoral college, screw that, popular vote. So, you know, it's lights out for the country with all this kind of crap going on, and we don't have a party that's going to fight for us. I think the same kind of thing also happened in Nebraska. They had a chance to do some sort of electoral, you know, clean up the voter rolls or do something with their voting security. And I think their governor vetoed the effort. Maybe I'm confusing it with some other law that's different. But again, it just points to the problem that we don't have any kind of party that is going to do this. And if we did, they would have done this literally. Well, we can argue what they should have done after 2020, you know, between then and January 6th. But we've had 4 years to take care of this problem. And the GOP has done basically nothing to essentially nothing to stop it until supposedly now with Watley and Trump and Lara Trump. I don't know if even that's going to. You know, as I said, I hope it makes a difference, but, you know, hope over experience.
So yeah. Maine has actually had ranked choice for a while. I think that they just voted essentially giving all of their electoral votes, which they used to split between the two candidates. They're going to give all the electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote within Maine.
Yeah, that's in Nebraska, I believe. That's
what Nebraska and Maine do that too. And actually on the my electoral college cheat sheet I have, I gave one of Maine's electoral votes to Trump. So that puts him in you know, one more vote in the hole. So
I thought I saw some rumblings about Nebraska giving all of their, in other words, not having like the two districts, but to give all of their electoral votes, in other words, winner take all, basically, making it that Omaha doesn't control the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that would be good for Trump because he would pick up an electoral vote there to balance Maine's loss.
Right. So is that happening? Do you guys know?
I do not know.
I believe, from what I understand, Nebraska nixed it. So it's not. Right. I don't think it's winning. I have to look it up, but.
Yeah.
Whichever way you slice it, I mean, even if it is good news, and I'm wrong about that, like I said, the problem remains. We do not have a true opposition party that stands with the people to try to stop this. And as I said, we have 4 years now to try to do whatever we could, wherever we could, to stop it. And basically, they've sat on their hands.
Well, gosh. Maybe the Republican National Committee for most of the last 4 years has not been really a big fan of Donald Trump. I don't know. Just spitballing here.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course, because they're, you know, again, they're the, you know, they're the, it's like the, as the great Rush Limbaugh put it, or somebody did, it's essentially Washington, D.C. is composed of the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals. And the Washington Generals are there for one purpose, to always lose to the Knickerbockers. Right. That's
So, you know, you talk about the Republican Party, you look at even significant Republican parties like in Arizona, they are unwilling to look at the larger picture. And so they push this, for instance, their abortion law, their Civil War era abortion law. They could have been very, very quiet about that, left abortion on the back burner, and allowed it to die on the vine. But instead, they make a big deal out of it. Oh, yes, they're going to enforce this law, which they probably won't be able to anyway. And now that has brought abortion back to the forefront. And that's a really, really bad idea, because we do not want the awfuls of America, the affluent, to vote with any with any more significance than they already do. But abortion is their lodestone. That's what they, you know, they wake up every morning and they worship Roe v. Wade, and they wake up every morning and they despise Donald Trump because he's against Roe v. Wade. And for Arizona to ignore the tone of the country is offensive to me. And listen, they're good Republicans. It's a relatively conservative state, and yet they have injured the Republican Party in 2024 because of this.
Yeah, well, you can always count on the Republican Party to step on every rake in the yard. I mean, that's just kind of the way they roll. But, you know, I saw some polling the other day, you know, the so-called woman gap, right? You know, heavily for Biden and not for Trump. It's actually a single woman gap. Married women are actually more inclined to vote for Donald Trump than they are for Joe Biden. Yeah. But again, I mean, you can go back to the way our society is evolving. You know, Gen Z and millennials are marrying a lot less than us, Gen X and the previous generations. If they do marry, they're marrying a lot later. They are much less inclined to start a family and to have any children. So, you know, demographically in that regard, we have more awfuls, you know, affluent white liberal women out there than we used to. And that's going to be interesting. But like, yeah, the woman gap is basically a single woman gap for which abortion is the only issue that they want to vote on. And actually, what's kind of interesting is that even much older women, you know, who have no need for abortion, to be honest, make it their number one issue as well. You know, so you know, just interesting observations on that. That, you know, perhaps the more people get married, the less well the Democratic Party seems to do.
Well, you can extrapolate that to the entire country. You look at the destruction of Black America starting in the 1960s because, you know, LBJ and the Great Society decided that marriage wasn't such a good thing because they. You know, Black America was moving into the middle class. They're not going to vote Democrat anymore. So he destroyed them. And one way he destroyed them was by making marriage unimportant.
And also, I believe the tax structure is that if you're a married couple, you get taxed out the wazoo as opposed to being I believe it's single people are taxed to a lesser extent than married couples. And it used to be, and in societies, I think all over the world, there always used to be incentives for married couples who have children. I think in Europe until fairly recently, or the last 20, 30 years, especially Eastern Europe, they used to literally give all sorts of breaks for people to have children. Yeah. Because you need, you know, this was a thing. You need to raise the next generation. They need to work. They used to need to work the land or do whatever it is. And now we're totally disincentivizing this. But in terms of abortion, yeah, I mean, look at what they tried to do. If you put that issue with the law, the Civil War era abortion law outside, they tried to destroy Carrie Lake from the very beginning. That party is a collaborationist party at best in Arizona. And then just look at Georgia. Look at Raffensperger and Kemp. Total anti-MAGA, anti-conservative people from their actions post 2020 up until the present day. They're horrible. I mean, they could have disciplined this Fannie Willis or gotten rid of her. They didn't do anything. And so they just, you know, they hate us as much as they hate Trump, and they are part of the problem. They are part of this kabuki theater of a fake two-party system and the myth of a two-party system that is basically, you know, just a one-party state that rules everything through the bureaucracy and so on and so forth. But as far as abortion goes, I think it's the only thing the Democrats have. Everything else, foreign policy, the economy, the border invasion and crime and all of that is really going to, I think that's going to, you know, make the difference. Trump so far has sounded all the right notes on abortion when he's stated, we talked about this on the last podcast, about leaving it to the states to decide. And that is the rational solution. So it's just up to us when the left brings it up to have the right kind of rhetoric to shove back in their face about it. And I don't know that we do have that as opposed to, you know, whatever it is. That's because they're obviously going to be harping on that from now through November. But there's a lot of good news, though, with blacks, with Latinos, and with, as you said, Jim, married women. and other minorities, they are abandoning the Democrats more and more. And if they're not going to be, at the very least, they're going to be sitting on their hands, and they may even be pulling the lever for Trump, because they look back at the last 4 years, and it's the question is your life better than it was 4 years ago? And not only is the answer is no, it's like worse by orders of magnitude. So there you go.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the people who run the elections and basically run the state of Georgia are allowing that to be one of the ground zeros of taking Trump out via the abuse of the legal system. But there's also and did they pass an election integrity law that was very, very mild, and Major League Baseball said we're moving the All-Star game. So these that kind of direct action by the left is intended to make sure that our elections, frankly, remain easy to manipulate and easy to cheat on. And so even if the Secretary of State of Georgia is not a big fan of MAGA, the likes of us and Donald Trump, you are either pro election integrity or you are pro cheating. There is no middle ground on this. And if you do not put laws in place that ensure the integrity of the elections, you are pro-cheating, period. That is a message that the RNC could be putting out there to whip these states into shape and to make sure that our elections are sound. Because if you do not take active steps to fix all of these problems with our elections, then you are pro-cheating. There's no other way to put it. I'm sorry.
You're
You
absolutely
cannot sit
right.
on your hands.
You're absolutely right. And yet, and yet, time and time again, we hear them acquiescing to the leftist cant of any sort of restriction on voting is racist. Well, explain to me how Black America buys cigarettes, buys booze, gets driver's licenses, but can't seem to manage to register to vote. How does that work?
Yeah, or just, it's look, everywhere you go requires a photo ID, regardless. You walk into any building anywhere, any office building in New York City or anywhere, you got to show your driver's license, and otherwise they won't let you in the building. Is that
Right.
not racist?
Yeah.
Or just plain and simple, is why is it if it only applied to Black people, sure, you can make a case, but everybody's got to show their ID. So how is it racist to ask a Black man to show or whoever to show their ID? Of course it isn't.
Yeah,
It's not racist. It's ridiculous
but
on the
that's the
face of it.
rake. That's the rake that Jim just described. That's the rake that the Republican Party steps on every couple of weeks when some idiot in a blue state says, "Oh, but it's racist." Well, explain how it's racist. But they can't. But the Republican Party does not challenge it. They're much more interested, like Lindsey Graham, "Oh, I want a national anti-abortion law." Oh, that's great, Lindsey. It's never going to happen, and you're pissing off the people that we don't want pissed off.
Right. It's like we talked about last week. I forget her name. God bless her. The refugee from communist China who basically, just destroyed David Camerahog about the Second Amendment. It's those kind of people who say that kind of rhetoric. I mean, it's brilliant, and it's just, can you
She's running
guarantee
for
me?
Congress in New Hampshire.
She's great, wonderful, and she, can you guarantee me that there will never be a fascistic dictatorship in this country? He goes, no, I can't do that. Good, then I'm keeping my guns, and that's why we have the Second Amendment. Now, craft that kind of an argument for abortion, especially late-term abortion or any kind of abortion, whatever you want to do, and shove it back in their face and just make them eat their words, because we're going to have to do it. I mean, believe me, I CBD, I'm with you. We should be trying to avoid this discussion as much as possible, because everything is the sad news is the state of the world and the state of the country in a sane world without election cheating should hand this election to Donald Trump on a silver platter every 57 states, as Obama would claim. But of course, it's not going to, and it's going to be a tough slog with all the cheating going on, despite of what's going on. So we don't need this freaking albatross of abortion on our head, real, imagined, or otherwise, to weigh us down. So learn how to do the linguistic jujitsu on the left when they bring this up, and let's win this effing thing once and for all.
See, this points to, again, kind of going back to some of CBD's earlier points in the very beginning of this podcast on how kind of our entire society really is broken and we've lost our moral center. And it points to the uniparty, which the fact that these election laws can't be fixed. They can be, of course, but they're not fixed. If you were to poll, maybe we'll have to do this for our next poll. We should put out there the very common sense election fixes and ask people if they support that idea. I would guarantee you would have wide support across both parties of ordinary Americans. They would want these kind of measures. They would want voter ID. They would want to end mass mail-in balloting. They would probably support, even if you have to mail in your ballot, getting that thing notarized to ensure that it is the one person, one vote that we are guaranteed in this country. And on abortion, partial birth abortion is not supported by the American people. Guns, the vast majority of American people support the Second Amendment and think it's important for citizens to be able to own firearms. Yet we continue to have a political system from both parties who seem to have no interest in enacting the will of the people as policy in this country, no matter. And this has been going on for decades and decades. The last time I can remember off the top of my head that our political system tried and did enact policies that reflected the will of the people was way back in 1994 with the Contract with America that Newt Gingrich brought out. That was the last time I can recall a concerted and focused effort to enact policy that the American people support. And instead, we seem to live in a country where the policies are the opposite of what Americans support. And on top of that, we have election systems that make it almost impossible because they are so rife with fraud. It makes it almost impossible for the will of the people to be reflected in election results. This is dangerous territory, and it's been this way for a long time. This is how and why you get civil unrest when the people feel like they are utterly powerless to use the ballot box to direct the country, which is the way it's supposed to work. And election after election, it seems the will of the people is never enacted. Even when Republicans get power, they tend not to do anything that they promised. They tend to not do anything that the Republicans or even the vast majority of Americans want. The same broken system keeps, this jalopy keeps lumbering along the road and, in a leftist direction, which is not what the American people want. We're a moderate, pretty reasonable country. We can have disagreements, and that's why we have 50 states. You can have 50 different abortion policies. That's the way it's supposed to work. But instead, we have a completely broken system, both in the elections and in public policy.
You remind me of the there's a wonderful quotation from Glenn Reynolds. He says, quote, "Most countries in the West are governed by a ruling class that doesn't much like the people it rules." And to that, I would add, "And they think they're stupid." And that combination is, as you say, quite dangerous because civil unrest is just the beginning. We've had civil unrest in the United States before. The 60s were nasty. The 30s were nasty. If you fast forward to the 2020s and the amount of stress placed on a civil society by exactly that ruling class is significantly greater, I think, than even in the worst parts, even in the worst bits of our history. And I think it can get very, very ugly. And I'm not suggesting that it should, but I despair of the alternative. I don't know what the alternative is.
Well, to your point, CBD, it is going to get ugly because it already is getting ugly between the trans shooters and other terrorists, and of course our friends from the peaceniks of the Religion of Peace and so on and so forth, with the eruption of virulent anti-Semitism. And the loudest voices aren't even the Muslims, but it's their leftists, atheist brothers from college campuses who are screaming the loudest, "Death to the Jews, death to America." But this has been going on, to your point, Jim. The transmogrification of America from what was supposed to be a decentralized government with the people at the top of the heap of political power. It's been going on for 100 years since Woodrow Wilson. It got ramped up, obviously, with the New Deal, and certainly with the Great Society. It's now we this is why we now have a you talked about the contract with America and Bill Clinton famously, quote unquote, triangulating and sort of backing off on some of the leftist policies that his that his horrendous wife and he truly supported because it wasn't the right time or it wasn't popular and so on and so forth. But they were always going to ram this crap home because the ratchet, as Margaret Thatcher always famously claimed, is ever leftward. It never goes back in the other direction. The only times it ever did that were a couple of very brief periods under, of course, Calvin Coolidge, under Ronald Reagan for a brief period, and of course, to the best that he could, under Donald Trump. But and the reason why we have this reaction coming from the left, that, and especially from the so-called elites that hate Trump, is because they hate us, because Donald Trump exposed it. And people finally opened their eyes and realized it's not just that Democrats and the seat, the bench warmers like W, when miraculously Republican every once in a while wins the election, they never reverse policies. They just sort of keep the thing in neutral at best. He exposed it. He yep. wanted to reverse course. And that's why everything has gone absolutely crazy and insane. So that's one of the drivers of whether you like Donald Trump, don't like him personally, whatever the reasons, which I think are irrelevant at this point. His greatest achievement, as we've always said, was exposing the con.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And unfortunately, the reality is that the exposing of the rot has simply allowed they've taken their masks off now. They're saying the quiet part out loud. I guess that's probably the best way to say it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we can only hope that arrogance, frankly, you know, you remove the mask because you think the game is over. You know, that it doesn't matter. Now you can see me. It's kind of spiking the, you know, it's kind of like spiking the football in our face that, yes, there is a ruling class. You know, you see it in the media. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, the deep state.
There was actually an article in the New York Times where they're saying, yeah, there's a deep state and we're cheerleading. We love it. They actually literally said it. Amazing.
Right. And but 2 years ago, the deep state was a conspiracy theory by the likes of us. Yeah. And so there's always these stages. First, it's ridiculous. It's a conspiracy theory. Then, oh, it exists and it's awesome. That's the way our legacy media covers all of these so-called conspiracy theories. But yeah, I use this phrase a lot. You know, the founding fathers left us a country in which we are a people with a government and not the other way around. At least that's what they hoped for us. But increasingly, or I think obviously, we live in a country with a government that has a people that it rules, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. And you know, as we were talking about election integrity, you know, I live in Illinois, and Bruce Rauner was elected governor as a Republican, I think back in 2014, and I was amazed because any Republican to win in Illinois with the utter corruption of Cook County in Chicago. Has to win by such a large margin, you know, above the percentage of fraud. So for Bruce Rauner to have won, it must have been a huge landslide of actual voters for him to get over the hump on all the corruption that happens in Cook County with elections in this state. And so now coming into the 2024 election, as our poll shows that 28% of people who are going to vote in the 2020 election by mail are willing to commit voter fraud in order to get their guy to win, that's a pretty large percentage of fraud to overcome. And, you know, so as we sit here speaking about this and we look forward to November, we just have to hope that the integrity of, let's just say that the will of the people is so strong that it overcomes the cheating that will inevitably and is already happening right now, as there's a lot of early voting probably happening, you know, this summer. We have to hope that the American people's will is going to be so clear and strong that it can overcome all of this, so that at least for one election, we can feel that it was legit.
Hold on one second, Septon. What Jim has just done is a coherent defense of the First Amendment and the Second Amendment. It's as simple as that. When the will of the people is continuously over years and years and years subverted by an unresponsive government, then that is what the First Amendment is for. And if they ignore the First Amendment, if they try to limit our First Amendment rights, that is what the Second Amendment is for. And that is the crux of the problem, that that they that that we have lost touch with the idea of the First Amendment, and we have lost touch with the idea that the Second Amendment defends the First.
Absolutely, and it's a frightening prospect that we are on the precipice of having to deal with that. And as I call it, it's sort of like that, you know, the classic thing with the fire alarm: break glass and pull handle, and you know, break the glass and grab the blunderbuss that's underneath. But that's almost where we're at, and it's sick in that literally a good chunk of this country, those people that are on the left, absolutely believe that we're the ones that are the danger to democracy, quote unquote. The fact that we're not a democracy is irrelevant. But it's this mass psychosis of that. And I see it with supposedly ordinary rational people that are in my own, unfortunately, hate to say it, circle of friends and even family, that truly believe that Donald Trump is a threat, and everybody who votes for him and everybody who follows him is a threat to the peace of the world and the freedom of America. And it's that is just a dangerous place to be. But I wanted to just to circle back to the top of the podcast of you know, just the things when we say about, when we joke about vote Burley, vote often, and vote for Trump. I mean, God bless me for saying this, but when a person like me, who I hope has an ethical base and a moral grounding and an upbringing by religious, God-fearing parents who are no longer with me, you know, in a way, thank goodness, because they'd be dying seeing what's going on in this country, I would never in a million billion years think of cheating or doing anything like that. But look at this way. I live in Wisconsin, and I really would have to say, I can't really answer the question definitively if it was put to me that if my vote or if an action that I took could guarantee that would prevent Joe Biden from winning Wisconsin, which is a major swing state, or Donald Trump perhaps winning it, should I take it or should I not take it? I can no longer honestly say that I wouldn't or would do it. And that's a horrible sort of barometer of how far we've come. If I recognize that our society is corrupt and I have to engage in corruption to beat the corruption, dear Lord, look how far we've sunk.
You know, I'm going to use an example, a personal example, the Rodney King riots in the 90s. I don't remember exactly which year it was.
92.
Was it 92? Yeah.
I was there.
I was working in a quite near a very, very bad part of Northern California. I worked near Richmond, California. I worked in Richmond, California, actually. And the riots were getting ugly. And I carried a gun. I did not have a carry permit for California. Those were very difficult to get. This was Alameda County. And I carried a gun because the breakdown of civil order was such that I had no choice. And I think that we are in a similar circumstance now. And Sefton, you described it very well. It is becoming a huge problem. What is going to happen to our republic, and what should we do about it? And law breaking is obviously the wrong answer, but if it's also the only answer, then we're in big trouble.
You're right. I mean, look who, like, hey, when you talk about law breaking, well, look who runs our criminal justice system. It's people like, you know, Merrick Garland, Christopher Wray, Fannie Willis, Letitia James, this Judge Merchant, this Alvin Bragg, and so on and so forth. So, you know, when the system is corrupt itself, I go to the incident that happened on the New York subway when Daniel Penny had to restrain a psychopath who was about to attack his fellow riders and unfortunately caused this guy's death. All of a sudden, he's the bad guy, and the guy who was ready to beat up and potentially knife and stab the fellow passengers is you know, he was a Michael Jackson impersonator. He's an innocent victim. Yeah. It's topsy-turvy world. So, you know, all bets are almost at the point of being off.
So we're reaching a hard stop, folks. But I would like to redirect your attention to the Heartland Institute article and their poll. It's fascinating. It's a quick read. Heartland.org. I Jim said it's on the front page still. It really is worth a read. It's fascinating. It's depressing, but it's vital, vital information, and we need to know this stuff. If we can claw our way back out of the big hole we're in now, This is the sort of stuff that we need. So
Jim,
Jim, give us,
any final thoughts?
Yeah.
Well, I would just say again, you know, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news every time I come on this podcast. Maybe we could talk about baseball or gardening or something next time. And maybe not be as enjoyable for the audience, but I think it might be good for our mental health. But I just want to, again, encourage your listeners to go to heartland.org, where you can find the results of this poll. And also a lot of other great information and material. The Heartland Institute is a think tank, and our job is to advance free market solutions to social and economic problems. So we're pro freedom. We are anti government control. And if you want to learn about school choice policy, if you want to learn about sensible environment and climate policy, heartland.org is your place.
CBD, Jim Wakely from the Heartland Institute, the VP and Director of Communications. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on this this podcast. I'm sorry that it was depressing, but, you know, look, it is what it is. We're not going to dress it up with lollipops and rainbows and like that. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. So on behalf of CBD and Jim Wakely, it's J.J. Sefton here for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks radio network around the nation. Across the world and up your street. We will see you again on the next one.
Thanks for listening, folks.